This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us today for Talk Louisiana on WRKF and a busy show. Jeremy Alford of Law Politics will comment on the legacy of his mentor, Louisiana columnist and commentator John James McGinnis, the pride of Baton Rouge, who would have been 70 years old tomorrow, born on St. Patrick's Day in 1948. Also, Mark Ballard of The Advocate on the first week of the regular session of the legislature. Singer Philip Manuel of New Orleans on the 100th birthday celebration of Nat King Cole tomorrow night at Snug Harbor, where Manuel will be performing. And Lonnie Luce of University Academy on learning in a virtual school, K-12. And we'll talk with him about this unique way of educating children. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana on WRKF. Your numbers are 877-217-5757 and 297-5633. The email is talk@talklouisiana.org. Our guest to start our show today is Jeremy Alford. He's the heir to Law Politics. John McGinnis started this site many years ago under a different name, and John James McGinnis was the premier columnist and commentator about Louisiana politics for many years up until his death in 2014. And tomorrow, the Baton Rougean, John McGinnis, would have been 70 years old. He left us much too young, dying at the age of 66. And Jeremy, you have taken the responsibility that goes with being his successor and done great work, but I know you must think of this man every day.
Well, of course I do. I think the most successful social media post that we've had this legislative year was on the final day of that failed special session just a couple of weeks ago. And I quoted John and put a nice picture of the Capitol, but the quote was that they could have done less, but they ran out of time. Which is a classic John quip. And man, he had a way of taking something like that and just condensing it down into a sentence or two, and then not only kind of bringing humor to what he was talking about, but just kind of summing it up in a very real kind of way.
You know, he would have loved the age of Trump. He he would have really gotten excited about this.
He would have, and but also at the same time, and I do think about it all the time, what John would think about what was going on right now. You know, but I could see John also becoming very frustrated with the legislative process in Baton Rouge, and you know, his kind of, I would say probably like his last probably decade of opinion columns really started to kind of take some definite stances, and you know, he when it came to opinion writers, he was right at the top.
He was at the top, born March 17th, 1948, and of course his generation was exposed to Vietnam, and unlike most men of his generation, he went abroad. He was a warrior. Most people, he didn't wear that on his sleeve at all. Most people did not know it, but he served in the Philippine Islands during the Vietnam War.
That's right, and he taught he was an English teacher for a little while, and eventually made his way back to Louisiana. And I think his first newspaper gig was with I think the Catholic Commentator.
I think so, and he was editor of the Reveille.
Yep.
During his days at LSU, graduate of Catholic High School in Baton Rouge. In 2000, inducted into the Manship School Hall of Fame, and many of us followed his lead. And he had not only an eye for what was important, but he had a way with people who were making the news. It was disarming. They often said things to him they wouldn't say to anybody else.
Well, that's you know, not only a testament to John and his trustworthiness, but you know, if you wear out the shoe leather and you stay on the carousel long enough, you're able to develop those kind of relationships. And he was a textbook case on of how to develop and maintain not only sources but meaningful relationships.
And he was a private man, but he met the love of his life rather late in life, as it turned out. And unfortunately, he didn't have that many years with Jackie.
No, I believe he married when he was 60 years old. And you're right. She was the love of his life. You couldn't wait to get home after the Capitol for a guy who was a fixture on the kind of the social circuit. Once he and Jackie got married, he was definitely he kind of scaled back on that and enjoyed his time with her.
Jeremy Alford is with us for a few more minutes, and Jeremy is a guy who follows the Capitol with earnest, and we do have an election. Hard to believe it's less than 19 months away from the primary of 2019, and this session that's ongoing, as the previous session, is certainly affected by the politics. And you note in your latest rundown that John Bel Edwards raised $1 million in 10 weeks. He is running for re-election with vigor.
He is. And, not only that, but we do a podcast for La Politics, and I had both of the new leadership for the Republican Party in here. And the new executive director, Andrew Bosch, said that they're predicting that the governor will go into that election with $10 million. That's not counting all of the outside money that's going to come here. And I tell you, there's going to be a lot of outside interest. The national parties are going to play, not necessarily because they're bullish on John Bel Edwards, because he's a big name in the party, especially among governors, but also because they want to make sure that they have a both parties want to make sure they have a governor here for the redistricting process. That's going to bring a lot of cash in. But Lewis Gervis, the new chairman of the Republican Party, predicted that the fundraising record that was set in 2015, $50 million spent, most expensive governor's race ever waged in Louisiana, that those records are going to be shattered completely next year. And I agree with him.
And he certainly will have an opponent or two or three on the Republican side, and the big wild card is Senator Kennedy. This would seem to be the time for him to run if he wants to be governor, and he has certainly wanted to be in the past. He's 66 years old. He'll be 68 by the end of next year, and that would be when he would take office. So if he's going to be governor, Jeremy, even though he got elected to the Senate just 2 years ago, this would seem to be the time to see if he can get elected.
Yeah, and, he's got kind of a head of steam behind him with all of the national media coverage, and he's definitely going to have the cash. Excuse me. But he's also going to have a little bit of leverage, the same kind that David Vitter had, is that he would, if elected governor, he would be able to appoint his replacement. And, I can only imagine that a smart politician would probably promise that to anybody who would listen and have a lot of dates to the prom on that. But, kind of all eyes are on him. And I would imagine that a lot of these Republicans who are looking at it, if Kennedy were to jump in, that would kind of clear the field a little bit. But if we learned anything about John Kennedy over the years, is that he will take and take as much time as he needs, and he'll wait to the last minute, and he'll milk it for everything it's worth. So he's going to slow play it, I think.
He gets much attention on Capitol Hill because he is quick with a quip, and the latest he's gotten both praise and criticism for his remarks about protecting dogs on airplane flights. This one is an interesting development, isn't it?
It's no doubt important that these animals be treated properly, but yeah, Jim, like it felt like it kind of came out of left field of all the issues that a junior U.S. senator could champion. As I understand it, he's an animal guy. He feels passionate about it, and maybe this is a rare glimpse into the personal side of a polished politician.
Well, he's been around a long time. I remember when he ran for attorney general in 1991. That's 27 years ago. So I think there are 10 elections that he's been involved in. And the thing about this that is beautiful for him is that even if he were to lose, he's still a U.S. senator.
That's right. It's a free shot for him. You know, I don't think he, if he's going to play, he's going to play to win. And, you know, I just came across another political action committee that's connected to John Kennedy that hasn't been reported on that I didn't know about. It's called Pelican Pack. I haven't been able to figure out if it's part of a joint fundraising operation, but, you know, he was a prolific fundraiser while he was holding state office. And I think he's kept that up while in office up there. And you got to imagine, I don't know how long he wants to stay in the U.S. Senate that as he gets older, but, you know, all of that money, you know, the things have changed. The fundraising landscape is different. He can now transfer that money to a super PAC to run for a state office. It used to be that you couldn't use that cash. You would have to try to dump it in a way that benefited your federal office and hope that it bled over into whatever state office you're pursuing. But he can take that cash with him.
On a scale of 1 to 10, what are the chances of him running?
Oh, Jim, I don't know, man. I don't know. I mean, it's 50-50.
All right.
Either way.
And last question, quickly, from a listener, your favorite John McGinnis book?
It was Last A Rod, without a doubt.
1984. That was about the 83 campaign with Edwards and Treen, and it was a book that propelled John McGinnis into a spotlight that he had not received before, a well-earned one. And Jeremy Alpert is continuing the great work of John McGinnis with Law Politics. Thank you, Jeremy.
Good to be on with you. Thank you.
This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us. 877-217-5757 is your number. And you're listening to Talk Louisiana on 89.3 WRKF. Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief for The Advocate, is with us. And he is a busy man, and much is happening not only at the Capitol, but beyond. And yesterday, Saints owner Tom Benson died at the age of 90. He also the owner of the New Orleans Pelicans of the NBA. And he bought the Saints in 1985 for $70 million. That franchise is estimated to be worth about $2 billion today. Benson was the richest man in Louisiana, and his wife, his widow Gail, will apparently receive the estate of one Tom Benson. He left quite a mark, didn't he, Mark Ballard?
Well, he did, and that was quite a return on investment for him because I believe the team now is worth about $2 billion. And he was the only one that you recall as a youth. I mean, that they lost every year. They were until he took over, and they had a couple of spurts of winning seasons. They're in one now.
Well, the Saints get, I think it's estimated, $165 million a year in tax breaks. And this is something I think that lawmakers may take a closer look at now. And the question is whether there will be any kind of forward movement on this. What do you think?
There is a lot outside of New Orleans. There are a lot of lawmakers that have troubles with the type of tax exemptions and various breaks that the Saints and the Pelicans have. Now, Benson would argue and did successfully argue, saying that he needed these kind of breaks so that he could have a national football team in a smaller market like New Orleans is. And we certainly, as taxpayers, have been giving it to them. Because not only are we talking about, you know, tax breaks on sales, they get concessions, they get those premium suites. They also basically agreed to rent at higher than market value the state agencies to rent office space in a tower that we gave him and he renovated after Hurricane Katrina. So there's a lot of money to keep a professional football team in New Orleans.
A listener says Benson also gets, and I think he's right, gets money for the naming of the Superdome, the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, and the Smoothie King Center. Did we ever find out? Bobby Jindal was keeping that secret, but did we ever find out how much Benson was receiving for that?
No, we haven't, and we don't have enough time on your show to actually go through all of the little perks that the Saints have gotten over the years and still receive.
Well, he's the richest man, or was, in Louisiana by a long way. The only billionaire, and his estimated worth is almost $3 billion. That's for now Gail Benson, I guess. But some would say, how can the richest person in Louisiana be getting tax breaks when the rest of the state is struggling and the government is having difficulty paying its bills?
And that is an argument that is... That has been raised and will continue to be raised around the legislature here, because, as I say, outside the city of New Orleans, there are a lot of legislators that are saying, why are we giving so much to such a rich organization?
David in Atlanta. Hi, David. You're on the air with Mark Ballard of The Advocate.
I understand the minimum wage increase will come up once again in the legislature, and it will probably fail, which, again, tells me that Louisiana is out of step with the rest of the nation. The economy is relatively strong. Unemployment is historically very low. And more than, I think, two-thirds of the states have raised the minimum wage. And, once again, Louisiana is at the back of the line to be a progressive state, because the more money that the low-income working person has, the more that person will spend, and it's better for everybody. And it's a shame the conservative legislature in Louisiana can't understand simple economics.
All right. Thank you, David. I think we're one of only five states without a state minimum wage. We go by the federal $7.25, and that's not a lot of money, $7.25. But some say in a poor state we can't afford to do more, even though Arkansas is at $8.50, and that's where the governor would like to get us in 2 years. He's tried this twice before, Mark. Is there any possibility there will be some momentum this time?
I would say little to none. It did get out of Senate committee yesterday, and it has to go on the floor. Well, no, actually, it has to go through another a Senate Finance Committee, where it has kind of died in the past. And then it has to go to the Senate floor, and then after that it has to go over to the House, which is much more conservative, and it would end up in the Labor Committee, and that's where these things usually die. He says he's going to keep bringing it up. The governor says he's going to keep bringing it up year after year until it gets passed, raising many of the same arguments that Dave in Atlanta did. But I think he'll just keep bringing it up year after year, because I don't see that as having any movement in the legislature this year.
And yesterday on this show, David in Atlanta, he mentioned a reported drug problem of Lawrence Larry Kudlow, the new economic advisor to the president, and I said I hadn't heard anything about that, but there are several reports that he did have a rather extensive cocaine habit at one point. 877-217-5757, Larry Kudlow, not David in Atlanta. Mark Ballard with us for a bit longer, and the session is now in week one, the regular session, after a failed special session, And this one may have to be condensed, Mark, because lawmakers have to have some time to get their fiscal house in order. What do you think will happen as far as when the regular session stops and the new special session begins?
Now, there are a number of legislators who are saying it's going to be unnecessary, that they'll be able to handle the budget within the time. That said, they are picking up the pace. There are committees that are holding hearings, twice in a week rather than once in a week, which is the normal way of doing things. And so the leadership apparently is on board with the idea of cutting out midway through May and then trying to deal with the budget during what would have been the rest of the time of the of this general legislative session. The idea being is that it wouldn't cost us any more money. There's been the legislature took a big hit on how much money the special session cost and how little was accomplished on it. And, going back to the hourly wages, that if you looked at what they did in session, I think the House was about $80 per hour, and the Senate got paid about $120 per hour.
even though we have a limited session, it appears, and there's no shyness from lawmakers on filing bills, and there are lots of bills about guns. This potentially could explode into some venom on the floor. And what are the prospects of getting some of these gun measures to the desk of Governor Edwards?
Well, I think that we will see. I mean, there are guns gun bills that would, you know, arm teachers, that would forbid teachers from being armed, and just a lot of that in between. And I think that that's going to be a pretty angry fight. It's already been fairly angry as they're talking amongst themselves, trying to, you know, pick up support for this measure or that one. And I think that it's a fairly deep divide between those that think we ought to arm teachers and those that think we should not arm teachers. So I'm reckoning that this is going to be a fairly significant fight.
And if one of those bills gets to the desk of the governor, he is on the record pro-Second Amendment. It would be very hard, I would think, for him to veto a gun rights bill.
It might be, but he has astutely stayed out of this particular debate. So
But there are even bills about abortion. The lawmakers never cease to dive into these controversial measures, even when the literal budget is crumbling around them.
Well, abortion is one of those things in Louisiana that is a win for them, and so that's why you keep seeing them come up every year.
Well, Mark Ballard, it is always a pleasure. We'll call on you again next week, let you get back to work at the Capitol. It's good to hear your voice as always.
Okay, appreciate it.
Take care. Mark Ballard, Capitol Bureau Chief for the newspaper of record, The Advocate. 877-217-5757 is your number. We're back after the news with Karen Henderson on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757. Hope those of you will be going to the annual St. Patrick's Day parade in Baton Rouge. Have a grand time tomorrow, and that the weather is conducive to parade going. And there's always thousands of revelers, and it has become a major event in this city every March 17th or whatever Saturday is closest to March 17th. But tomorrow it'll be on the day, St. Patrick's Day. March 17th, 1979 was the birth date of none other than Stormy Daniels. Stephanie Gregory Clifford, pride of Scotlandville Magdon High School, was born on St. Patrick's Day 39 years ago tomorrow. So happy birthday to Stormy Daniels. And tomorrow is also the birthday of one Nat King Cole. And biographies about the great singer from Montgomery, Alabama indicate he was born in either 1917, 18, or 19. So depending on the biography, he either would have been 99, 98, or 100 years old tomorrow. And Philip Manuel, one of the best singers in America, who calls New Orleans home, has been with us several times, will be performing in honor of Nat King Cole tomorrow night at Snug Harbor in New Orleans. And good morning to you, Philip Manuel.
Good morning, Jim. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well, and it's great to hear your distinctive voice. And you have commented many times on the legacy of Nat King Cole and his impact on your career.
Yep. My grandmother, when I was younger, in my teenage years, gave me, I was already singing, of course, but she gave me a six-album set of his music, and it just kind of changed my life. I mean, I fell in love with his voice, and, you know, fortunately, the timbre of my voice is close to his, so it makes this show a lot easier to do.
Well, I'm looking, most biographies have his birthday as March 17th, 1919, which would mean he would be 99 years old tomorrow. So next year, I guess, will be the big blowout. But it is appropriate to remember this man, and he was only 45 years old when he died. 45. What he could have done.
Well, he did a lot in those 45 years. He had 70 top 40 records in his short lifetime.
70. And he was diagnosed.
70, if I'm remembering correctly, it was something that was the figure I recall.
I think you're right. And he was diagnosed with lung cancer in the latter part of 1964. I mean, right at the end of 64. Had surgery first week of December in 64, right after he had recorded his last album.
And the last hit, which was L-O-V-E.
There you go. And 10 weeks, I'm glad you said that, and this is not a setup, but 10 weeks before Nat King Cole died, 10 weeks before he died on February 15th, 1965, he recorded this song.
L is for the way you look at me. O is for the only one I see. V is very, very extraordinary. E is even more than anyone that you adore can love. Is all that I can give to you. Love is more than just a game for two. Two in love can make it. Take my heart and please don't break it. Love.
It's timeless, isn't it?
It really is. It really is. You know, that's when I listen to that now, and knowing that he died shortly thereafter, I can actually hear a little stress in his voice, and I never really recalled that before.
Well, to have lung cancer, wind power, as you know, is so important when you're singing.
Yeah, yeah.
And he still sounded great.
The quality of his voice is beyond compare. But, you know, I did hear him just a little, and never really noticed that before.
Often we hear people referred to as having a great voice or the greatest voice, but as Bum Phillips once said, when you're talking about something like this, and Nat King Cole's name is mentioned, it doesn't take long to call the roll when you're comparing people with him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there were a few great voices. Of course, there was Frank. It was Billy Eckstein. You know, and I have to tell you, I mean, I don't know whether people remember guys like Jerry Vale, but, man, Jerry Vale had one of the most fantastic voices.
He did.
And Andy Williams was another.
Mm-hmm. Jerry Vale, when I was a kid in New Orleans, I remember him performing at the Roosevelt Hotel in the Blue Room.
Wow. Wow.
He had a
phenomenal voice.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if Nat King Cole ever performed at the Blue Room.
I don't know. That's a bit of information I should look up. I know Ella Fitzgerald did.
Yes, she did. Did he spend any time in New Orleans?
I don't think so. I don't recall anything. He didn't perform down south much at all, actually.
Well, at that time,
I think he came back to Alabama once, and there was some problems during that time in history, and I think he kind of promised himself that he wouldn't do much entertaining in the South.
Well, when you're singing his songs, talk about having a tough act to follow. How do you prepare for this?
Well, the songs I've sung a lot, so I'm pretty comfortably vocally with them. You know, my big stress comes in remembering his life and his biography. I mean, he did so much in such a short period of time, you know, that I try and get as much of the information in as I can without talking too much. But man, he lived a full life for 45 years.
A listener asked if you liked the remake of Unforgettable with his daughter Natalie.
Absolutely.
Yeah, those who loved it and those who thought they should have just left it alone. But it was great.
I absolutely loved it. There's nothing not to like about it.
She was fabulous, too.
Yeah, she could really sing.
Yeah. But in those days, treatment for cancer was rather primitive. He was given cobalt treatment.
Wow.
At 45, went fast, and he's buried at Forest Lawn Memorial Park in Los Angeles. But there are those like Frank Sinatra who reverently spoke of Nat King Cole and his abilities.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Frank was a big fan of his. And you know what's funny, Nat, talking about where he's buried, you know, when he got to California, he was about 18 or 19 years old. He was on tour with the UB Blake. It was called the Shuffle Along Tour. And the tour ended in California. And, you know, he really never left California. He made it his home for the rest of his life.
Yeah, born in Montgomery, grew up in Chicago, and lived in California. And another listener notes that Nat King Cole sang at the 56 Republican convention in support of Dwight Eisenhower. That convention, I think, was at the Cal Palace in San Francisco. And then,
you know, what else happened in 1956? He had his television show.
1956?
That was the year his television show premiered. And I think it only had one season. There's the famous headline, I think, in the Wall Street Journal that said, Wall Street afraid of the dark or something like that. He couldn't get sponsors.
Isn't that something? Nat King
Cole. And most of the people who performed on the show performed for free, like Frank Sinatra, Ella Fitzgerald. They performed for free.
Well, Nat King Cole, in addition to being at the GOP convention in San Francisco in 56, he performed in 1960 at the Democratic convention. He supported John Kennedy in Los Angeles in 1960. And he was,
You're schooling me, Jim.
Yeah, yeah. He was a man about town. And your favorite Nat King Cole song?
Well, it's probably the one I close the show with. Answer me, oh my love, just what sin have I been guilty of? I just think it's the most beautiful, simple melody about the universal subject, love.
Paul in Opelousas. Paul, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Let's see. We're having some difficulty back at getting to Paul, so let's see if we can get him now. I don't know what the deal is, but his phone, there we go. Paul. Oh. We lost Paul. Paul, if you call us back, we'll try to slide you in under the wire. But the songs are timeless, and the legacy is immense. And to put it in perspective, Philip, he died in 1965. I think, what, you were like 9 years old?
In 1965, I was, I was born in 53. So I was 12.
Okay, so you remember him before he died?
You know, my grandmother and I watched a lot of the musical shows like Mitch Miller, Andy Williams, Lawrence Welk. I mean, that was like our Saturday night thing. I don't remember his show other than, you know, recordings of the show. But it couldn't have been long after he passed that my grandmother, maybe just a few years, gave me this 6-record set of his music. It was either a birthday or a Christmas gift to me. And I just fell in love with it.
Well, before we go finish our conversation with Philip Manuel, we have a call or two waiting for him, and we're also going to hear from Lonnie Luce of University View Academy. But Allie and Becca, let's give a listen to another one of the timeless songs of Nat King Cole as we go to the break. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. Allie Baltazar and Becca Dill producing. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. In a few moments, we're going to hear from Dr. Lonnie Luce of University View Academy. But we're finishing up with Philip Manuel, one of the most prolific and accomplished singers in the world, who calls New Orleans home. And tomorrow night, he will be on stage at Snug Harbor at 8 o'clock and at 10 o'clock, paying tribute to the late, great Nat King Cole, whose birthday was St. Patrick's Day. Philip Manuel and Paul in Opelousas. Paul, I want to get you in before we part company with Phil. Paul, good morning to you.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning. Quick. Recently, Gregory Porter was in Lafayette singing. He just put an album out of Nat King Cole's music. Have you had a chance to listen to it? And just
I
like
have
Jim,
not.
Just like Jim, Greg Reporter's mother is from Shreveport. So we got Louisiana people all over the place. Thank you. Bye.
All right. Thank you, Paul. But you've been singing Nat King Cole songs for a little while, Philip.
Yeah, I have. But you know who Greg Reporter is, don't you, Jim?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's a phenomenal singer. He's got a wonderful voice.
There's some hidden jewels, and Louisiana continues to produce great vocalists. You've commented on your Odyssey. Your father was a big inspiration to you.
Oh, man, what a singer. What a singer he was.
Well, you are too, and Philip Manuel will be on stage tomorrow night, 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock at Snug Harbor, appropriately paying tribute to Nat King Cole on what probably was the 99th birthday. Different biographies
Correct.
Have different years, but the one that is most often recognized now is March 17th, 1919. So 99 years since the birth
yep.
of Nathaniel Adams Coles in Montgomery, better
That's
known
correct.
As Nat King Cole. Thank you, Philip.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks for having me, man. And I look forward to seeing you.
I'll see you tomorrow night. And in studio is Dr. Lonnie Luce from University View Academy. Underwriter of WRKF, by the way, but 2,300 students. This school is governed by the state of Louisiana, K through 12 online school with some expansion going on. Now, tell us about how this works. You've been on this show, I believe, before. I've done other shows with you, but it is amazing how now potentially a child can get a good education without ever going to school.
Yes, we have had a blast with that we have students in virtually every parish of the state and are continuing to grow with that.
Every parish in the state. So how does it work?
Well, a kid will go online or the parent will go online to our website, universityview.academy. They will enroll and we will set them up. We'll take them through a process. Will they understand how to do it? We'll ship them books. We'll ship them all the curriculum they need. We'll ship them computer, and we'll set them up, walk them through the process, and we'll have certified teachers on one end that works with the student and the parent to give them a great education.
And this is a tuition-free school?
This is a tuition-free school, public school.
So that's the operative word in Louisiana and everywhere else for that matter, and it's done obviously through the help of taxpayers and 2,300 students, that's a lot of students. Where are most of them congregated?
The bulk of them are kind of below the I-12, I-10 corridor, so probably 75% of our students are in the south, and about 25% of our students are Alexandria up through Shreveport in that area.
877-217-5757 or 297-5633 in Baton Rouge. Talk at talklouisiana.org for Dr. Lonnie Luce, who has an interesting background to himself. You had to think long and hard about taking this gig. What propelled you to do this after a life in education and other venues?
Well, the last place I was before this, I was a public school superintendent in St. James Parish, and I wanted the programs that we offer with dual enrollment programs there were not offered to many students around the state. And some of the things that we're able to do is offer every kid, regardless of their zip code, the ability to take college courses while they're in high school, and just some of the things that we can offer. I wanted to make sure every student in the state has the access to those programs.
And now you're expanding some. I said K through 12, you're getting kids involved in the college level as well.
Yes, we are. We have relationships with our whole LCTCS system, the Louisiana Technical and Community College system in the state, and many of our four-year universities.
How does that work?
Well, we have professors that have doctorates or terminal degrees that we have that teach courses, but we also will pay full tuition and fees and have students actually sitting on the campus. We have some at Tech or some at ULL or different places around the state. So either community colleges or four-year universities, while they're in high school, they can take dual enrollment courses online, or we will actually have them in brick-and-mortar colleges around the state.
And for those, here's a question from a listener. For those who are unfamiliar, Kylie asked about when a student is participating. What I don't know how you gauge this, but what's the student-teacher ratio?
The student-teacher ratio to us is very similar to what a regular brick-and-mortar classroom would have. So we do put money into our staff. So it may be a little bit more. It's about 25-1 at our elementary level and similar at our high school level as well.
For those who say that you can't really get the full experience of going to school when you're doing it online, how do you answer them?
Well, I say that we actually have more interaction with students online than they do in a regular classroom. In a regular classroom with 30 kids, many times students don't have interaction with the teacher. In our case, they have interaction with our teacher all the time. Our parents are in the classroom, especially at the elementary level. Every time that our teachers mm-hmm. teach, the parents are in the classroom and engaged in their learning.
How do you handle recess?
Well, the flexibility is one thing that they love. So as long as they handle the coursework, they actually can complete coursework in a much shorter time when they do it online and in their home. With all the things that disrupt in a regular mm-hmm. school, they're able to do that.
Now, this is a charter school, and it's a virtual charter school. How do your test scores compare with other schools?
We are a C school, but if you look at some of the statistics, we're very high in the state in ACT scores. So our students that are in high school score much better than the state average in the ACT. And we're our graduation rate, I think, is the main issue we have. We take a lot of kids that have different social emotional issues, so we'll have a lot of kids that have severe anxiety and those type of things that are in our school. So we're really working through to graduate a lot of students around the state that wouldn't have another opportunity without us.
Is this something that's being done in other states?
Yes, about every state has a virtual school. Most of them are run by one of the two big organizations. K-12 is a big group, and Connections is, and we do it independently with all Louisiana staff.
You remarked that your ACT score is better than the average in Louisiana. What is it?
It's almost 21.
21, and I think you can be TOPS eligible at 20, correct?
Correct.
So 21 is a bit above that threshold, and TOPS is a program that many people take advantage of in Louisiana, and for good reason. Do you think this is the wave of the future?
I really do. I don't think it's the right answer for everyone, but it is the best answer for many. And I think all students need to learn how to do this somewhat, because I think that's where the professional development will be for most employees down the road.
As far as socioeconomic backgrounds, do you have a grasp of where your students are largely coming from?
We're very similar to the rest of the state. We're within one percentage point. So we're a little over 60% of our students are on free and reduced lunch right now.
A little over 60%, which is comparable to Louisiana. People may have a hard time fathoming that, but in public schools, that's generally the way it is. As far as demographics, minority representation, do you have a cross-section of Louisiana?
We do. It's not, even though the economically disadvantaged is very similar, we're probably slanted a little more toward the majority in the population. So we're about 75% white probably in our school.
And Lonnie Luce, you've been doing this for how many years now?
This is my second year.
Second year. And as mentioned, you left a job in education elsewhere. How's the adjustment been for you?
It's been interesting because some of the people said I kind of moved to the dark side when I moved from a traditional school to the charter school. But I have really enjoyed it and have really gained relationships with many other people and want to show that we can complement education and improve it in the state by competition.
And you have quite a physical plant not far from WRKF.
Yes, we have really enjoyed that right there at Jamestown, and then we purchased the lobby building right down the street as well that gives us a lot of professional development space.
So you got a lot of space, 2,300 students taking advantage, and how many employees?
About 150 employees.
150 employees, and I guess they're all located right around that area. All 64 parishes represented, pretty close to it?
Pretty close to it.
Well, as mentioned, University of Buick Academy is an underwriter for WRKF. It's a Louisiana-based K-12 tuition-free online charter school, now getting involved in the college process. And again, your website is?
universityview.academy.
Thank you, Dr. Lonnie Luce, and hope you have a great weekend. We'll be back Monday, same time, same place. Until then, for Becca Dill and Allie Baltazar, I'm Jim Inkster. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned.
Thank you.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.